Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and it's Friday, which means, yes, it is time for the Week in Review, beginning with continued allegations and now consequences of sexual abuse and harassment. This week, two Democratic lawmakers stepped down. Here's longtime Michigan Congressman John Conyers speaking on WPZR in Detroit following allegations that he harassed staffers, including by walking out of a bathroom naked and rubbing his hands on their legs.
They're not true, and I think that they are something that I can't explain where they came from.
Yesterday, Senator Al Franken announced his resignation following allegations from at least a half dozen women who say he groped them.
I, of all people, am aware that there is some irony in the fact that I am leaving while a man who has bragged on tape about his history of sexual assault sits in the Oval Office, and a man who has repeatedly preyed on young girls campaigns for the Senate with the full support of his party.
And in Massachusetts, Stan Rosenberg temporarily stepped aside as state Senate president as his husband is investigated for sexually harassing at least four men. Here's the acting president of the Senate, Harriet Chandler.
Somebody has got to lead the chamber, and this is an acting, it's temporary, and I think that's the best we can do.
Well, we've got a great panel to discuss the week's news with us today. Michael Curry, former president of the Boston branch of the NAACP and a member of the National NAACP Board of Directors. Michael, it's good to have you back.
Good to be here.
Also with us is Ed Lyons, a Massachusetts Republican activist and co-host of the Lincoln Review podcast. Ed, welcome to Radio Boston to you.
Thank you for having me here.
It's great to have you. All right, so let me just get your first thought, the first thoughts from both of you on the resignations that we have seen this week. I mean, beginning with Conyers and Al Franken. Michael, did they take the, well, I guess I should say Conyers is stepping down, but did they take the right actions?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting time. I think this is truth catching up to history. I think we've had women for many generations complaining about this kind of behavior in government and politics, in the media and entertainment. And there have been there hasn't been an adequate response. And now the timing is right, and these folks are now being held accountable, and in many cases are having to resign. And I think it's important, as an attorney, I would say, it doesn't mean every allegation is 100% completely true, but it means that there's some culpability. There's something they did wrong that they acknowledge, and hopefully there are the right systems, whether it's court or whether it's ethics organizations, commissions, that can look at it and see what the behavior was.
Okay, so let's talk about that a little more. I mean, Ed, what's your take? Because now I'm starting to ask myself the question of accountability and proportionality as well. I mean, is Al Franken resigning before there was a Senate Ethics Committee investigation the right thing to do? He was under pressure from 32 of his fellow Democrats.
Well, I'm really trying to stay very positive despite all this terrible news we're hearing. I'm telling myself that all these bad things have happened and, as Michael says, have been happening, and that what is different now is justice is arriving. So I'm trying to stay positive, saying this is not a happy moment, but it is a good moment. There are millions of women out there saying, thank God this is finally happening. Now, because this movement has been very momentum-based, it seems to be very important to keep the momentum going. I do think there will probably be people who are maybe accused who were innocent, or people will be punished too much. But I think that when justice arrives, I think that we should be welcoming it and understand that it won't be perfect. But I do think that the people that are worried about this going too far would never have brought us to this moment.
Okay, interesting. Just to bring us up to speed, because the news keeps coming on this front, right? We have Arizona Republican Congressman Trent Frank resigning yesterday, saying he's going to step down at the end of January because of allegations that he physically intimidated, coerced, or tried to discuss surrogacy with members of his staff. And also House Ethics Committee in Washington opened a separate probe into Texas Republican Representative Blake Farenthold. So, until last night, I was thinking, are Republicans going to start feeling this accountability and justice moment? And apparently the answer is yes.
Right, right. It's a long time coming. I think the reality is we didn't see much of a reaction at the top with President Trump. And I think the women in those cases, and again, you can try to determine which one of them have merit or not, but the reality is that there's a critical mass of women who've accused him of the same thing, and he was never held accountable, and we as a nation ignored it. Yeah. And shame on all of us for that. Shame on the electorate that didn't think that was critical to deciding whether he should be president. And then we have Roy Moore in Alabama. Where are we going to be there, and what's the electorate going to do in Alabama? And if they ignore that, again, shame on them as the voters. Mm.
So, Ed and Michael, I'm going to come back to this question now, because it is the thing that I'm starting to think about in the last couple of days, that you both are exactly right. Like, there's this question of justice and accountability, right? I mean, and no one should ever diminish the reality of the victims and their experience. And there is this momentum, right, that's hopefully causing some sweeping change. I acknowledge all of that. But I do also wonder, you know, are we at the risk of a backlash if there isn't some kind of proportionality with some of these cases? You know, I'm thinking, going back to Al Franken, yes, more than half a dozen women, but at first he wanted to actually have an investigation, but he was under so much pressure that that never happened.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I always make the comparison to these cases to racism. I believe most people who think that there's not a lot of racism don't know what racism is, right? And there's a lot of people who think they're not racist who are. Who perpetuate racism and just don't understand it. And I think the same thing happens with this sexual abuse, misconduct, that the more people understand it, the more they'll realize it's rampant, it's pervasive. And as a society, we got to decide, okay, now that we are more conscious, how will we do this due process thing to make sure that people that the allegations are investigated, that they're confirmed, and that then there's the punishment that follows that. Right now, I think, as we talked about, the pendulum has swung the other way, mm-hmm. where now people are just being called upon to resign without the evidence, without the conversation. But we got to get to some place where there's an investigation, there's some proof, and people have to take the appropriate action.
Ed?
Yeah, I mean, Ruth Marcus said in the Washington Post yesterday that, you know, we have Bob Menendez, who is in the U.S. Senate, who certainly looks like he was engaged in bribery. And that they said, oh, well, there's due process. And the case went to a jury. It was a hung jury. And the Senate's going to keep investigating him. But everyone said, no, it's important. He's innocent until proven guilty. And he's still there. And there isn't a lot of outcry that he leave because due process is important. Normally, I would say that, wait a second, maybe we should get some more due process around these allegations. But I think the due process people should just hustle and get going and do this. I think that it seems to me that momentum is so important this happening, women building on the strengths of other women coming out. I really would not want to try to slow that down in the name of a process that might not arrive. Michael is absolutely correct.
Right.
The fact that people who are agitating for change are always told you're doing it too fast or you're doing it wrong or people will be blamed too much. Women have been told who are harassed, oh, you shouldn't accuse that man. You know, he'd be overly punished. And, you know, everyone's being told to sort of pull back. I think it's crazy to say now, like, we're worried about this getting out of control when there's so much justice to be done. So I do think that needs some more due process. But if you are a due process guy, I want you to stay up all night and figure this out.
Because we don't.
I think the answer is for them to hustle, not for everyone else to slow down.
So, Ed, I'm going to stick with you here for a second, because your point is well made and well taken. But I'm also continuously perplexed by, on the one hand, with Franks and Farenthold, we've got some action going on Republican House regarding Republican House members. But
there will be more.
The RNC still stands by Roy Moore. And if we're talking proportionality, he's over there in the Harvey, allegedly over there in the Harvey Weinstein end of things. But the party is rallying around him to put him in the Senate.
Well, I think that the fact that the party didn't even acknowledge they were doing this means that if they're having a rally, it's under cover of darkness here. I mean, we know about it, but it isn't like they told anybody they were doing this. It is absolutely shameful. But I think it's polarization. I think that there are, you know, there's more than one pathology at work in American politics right now. So I think that polarization has led us to this moment of tribal loyalty where we are unable to detect other kinds of injustice. So I think that people haven't fully digested what polarization has done to American politics. I would like to think that the RNC supporting Roy Moore is going to convince us that polarization has a much higher cost than we think it does.
So not to make light of the serious point you made, but my director and I, we like to make crazy T-shirts. And I have a new one. There is more than one pathology at work in American politics right now. Ed Lyons. I think it's smart analysis there.
And just because a sin is a sin is a sin. But what Roy Moore is accused of is at the worst end of the sentence, right?
Oh, and be careful. There's still a few days left in the election. Something worse may come out.
And I think that's not talked about enough. I think the fact that the RNC, the president, are supporting him despite what he's alleged is doing, and that there's quite a bit of critical mass of complaints that he did, it really shocks me that we are there as a, we're so polarized and tribal as a country.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about what's happening here locally in Massachusetts on this issue, because as we mentioned at the top of the segment, Stan Rosenberg is temporarily, for now at least, stepping aside as state Senate president as his spouse is being investigated for allegedly harassing at least four men. Senate Democrats in the State House caucused for about 8 hours this week, and they chose a new temporary president, Senator Harriet Chandler. Here's part of what she said.
We hear the victims of these allegations. We admire their courage in coming forward. No one who serves, works, or does business in the Massachusetts State House should feel unsafe, coerced, or unsupported.
And here's Governor Charlie Baker on Tuesday saying that there does need to be a thorough investigation.
And I really believe that it's hugely important for this investigation to be completely independent of the Senate, so that these folks believe they can come forward and speak to these issues without worrying about repercussions.
Ed, your thoughts on how this is being handled on Beacon Hill?
Well, I'm glad the issue's been raised. I feel bad for President Rosenberg. I don't think he's going to return. I think this investigation will show that he either enabled this or he was helpless. Neither of those outcomes will make people want to return him to his leadership post. I'm hoping that this commission expands its charter and includes more cases of harassment. I know people on Beacon Hill. They claim there have been problems for a long time, even if they are not being named. So I hope that, Senator Chandler is sincere, and I hope that message gets out there. They don't have jurisdiction over Hefner at all, so I hope that what happens is they create sort of a clearinghouse for all kinds of other complaints and people come forward. That would be, to me, the best outcome of this.
So, again, a tip of the hat to Yvonne Abraham and her reporting in The Globe that brought these stories to us. And I'm a total broken record on one point here, and that is every single person who spoke to her said that they had nowhere to go. There was no one they could talk to, no one they felt that they could report to. Not just in this case with Rosenberg's spouse, but the other harassment cases she's been reporting on. And that, to me, Michael, seems to be the thing that can be most immediately fixed.
Right. Right. And I think there's some calls within the legislature. I know we've heard the Speaker and the Senate President talk about changing the culture and putting some processes in place to make sure that those things can be reported. I also want to echo that I've known the Senate president, and I'm actually discouraged. I'm disappointed by how this is playing out. I think he's a genuinely good man who took the presidency and opened up the process. He invited a lot of us in to talk about all the issues we care about and said, I really want to make sure that this is a big tent to include as many issues as possible. I don't share the belief that he will end up having had something to do with this. I hope not.
And at least a couple of the cases, though, he's allegedly to have been just several feet away.
Yeah, I think this is probably one of those cases that we've all had, if you've ever been in a position of influence, that the spouse, the friend, somebody in your circle is power peddling and making it sound like they can get something done because they have a relationship with you. I would imagine that's rampant, no matter whether you're entertainment or politics, and people do it. But I hope, based on what I know of him, and the integrity that I've seen out of his office, that that this ends up the right way.
But Michael, let me ask you. I mean, this is a tough one because Brian Hefner, Rosenberg's spouse, got in trouble before. I mean, for sending out tweets maligning Therese Murray and following that. That's what Senator Rosenberg said he was going to make a firewall between his spouse and activities on Beacon Hill. So had those previous incidents and promises not been part of this picture, I get what you're saying, but there's a track record here, which is why I think a lot of people are worried about how much can they trust Senator Rosenberg.
Yeah, I just don't know. And I have family members and relationships over the years, and I don't know how much you can control anyone else in your family or someone you love doing something that's reckless. I think you can do your best to do that. And I'm hoping as they do the investigation, they will see that he put those firewalls in place. And in the end, if they find out that he did participate in this, then I believe he should not return as Senate president. But I'm hoping that that's not the case.
We'll see what the investigation turns out. when it does turn it out. Just got a couple minutes, but there's another big story that I do want to touch on that happened this week in Massachusetts, and that has to do with State Auditor Suzanne Bump, because yesterday she released a very troubling report on the Department of Children and Families. She found at least 260 cases between 2014 and 2015 where a child under DCF supervision had suffered serious injury, but DCF wasn't aware of those injuries. Bump told us that she believes it's a sign of some serious failings at DCF.
We used the information at our disposal, the same information that DCF has at its disposal, but does not use, still does not use.
I mean, more than implying there that there's no reason she believes why DCF should not have known about these cases. Ed Lyons, your thought here. I mean, here is a supremely troubled agency that starting in September 2015, Governor Baker said he was putting it on the road to reform.
So there have been, it is deeply troubled, and it reminds me of the MBETA, where it has different kinds of problems. Some of them are cultural, some of them are organizational, some of them are oversight, some of them is the complexity of the job that they have. So I think that there was two rounds of reforms. One was in September 2015. Another one was several months later.
That's right.
That seemed more serious. They had the cooperation of the union representative overseeing that part of the government. So I'm hoping that what was put in place, at least after the second round, would answer some of these concerns. I'd like to add that some of the problems here are related to technology, that I think that it's overlooked that when you see these failures in government, that some of them are because systems aren't being used, they're not connected. When Suzanne Bump says that dead people are getting checks they're not entitled to, it's because the system that knows people have died isn't talking to the ones cutting checks for social programs. I think in this case, you know, it's that information was over here in medical records that MassHealth had and not in the hands of people who were on the front line. So I do think that this is another reason to really say, you know, do these agencies with, you know, tracking 50,000 children is not a person problem, it's a computer science problem. And you have to give people the interface to manage all those cases. You can't manage that many kids one-on-one, right, word of mouth, what's in the office, with sheets of carbon paper. It has to be a very sophisticated – don't laugh. My daughter was in early intervention in Boston several years ago, and the caseworker came to our house. It was for cognitive delays that are now gone. You know, had sheets of carbon paper to report on what was happening. And I said, my goodness, is this how you're dealing with children?
Wow.
Now,
okay.
I just think that – so it's like there are plenty of problems in government. I want to say that some of them are related to technology.
Therefore, should be fixable.
Well, Governor Baker did this. So now I heard they were going to get iPads and they were going to have, you know, submit buttons about different kinds of things. So there is a component of this that isn't just vague. It's saying, no, that this is an information sharing problem. And I support Governor Baker's efforts to modernize the technology in these agencies.
Well, I will give the last word here today to Michael Curry on this.
Yeah, I mean, part of this is what we see in government sometimes anyway, which is just systems not communicating. We see this with funding issues that you give these departments, these agencies, these secretariats, these huge responsibilities, but they don't have the funding to actually do the work. I think credit to Governor Baker. Much of what Suzanne Bump found, Auditor Bump found, was prior to the changes that we're talking about.
Yeah, a year and a half prior, exactly.
So, you know, you get in and you figure out what a critical incident is, and if a critical incident does not include rape and sexual misconduct or sexual abuse, you have to include that. So some things that have to change immediately, and it is inherently fraught with failure, and we got to figure out how to get to that and eliminate it. And I'm confident that this administration is taking that seriously, and I'm hoping it'll change as well.
Time flies when the talk is good and smart. So Michael Curry, former president of the Boston branch of the NAACP and a member of the National NAACP board, thank you so much, Michael.
Thank you.
And Ed Lyons, Massachusetts Republican activist and co-host of the Lincoln Review podcast. It was great to have you, Ed. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.